From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. An agreement has been reached between the P5 plus one and Iran. Some call it historic, and others an historic mistake. An interim agreement on Iran's nuclear program was announced on Sunday. The U.S., U.K., Russia, China, France, and Germany, collectively known as the P5 plus one, reportedly came to the agreement with Iran earlier in the weekend. Iran is reported to have agreed to curb some of its nuclear activities in return for some relief in the sanctions imposed on the country as a result of claims that it has a nuclear weapons program. The agreement has been welcomed by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Derek Imbata is at the United Nations and gave us this report.
In a statement issued by his spokesperson, Secretary General Ban congratulates the negotiators for the progress they have made. The statement says the six-month accord could turn out to be the beginnings of a historic agreement for the peoples and nations of the Middle East region and beyond. Mr. Ban urges the governments concerned to do everything possible to build on this encouraging start, creating mutual confidence and allowing continued negotiations to extend the scope of this initial agreement. The statement says the Secretary General reaffirms his unswerving commitment to strengthening nuclear disarmament and the non-proliferation regime. The Secretary General calls on all members of the international community to support this process, which, if allowed to succeed, is likely to be to the long-term benefit of all parties. The statement concludes. Derek Imbata, United Nations.
U.S. President Barack Obama called the pact an important first step towards a comprehensive solution to the problem of Iran's nuclear program.
Good evening. Today, the United States, together with our close allies and partners, took an important first step toward a comprehensive solution that addresses our concerns with the Islamic Republic of Iran's nuclear program. Since I took office, I've made clear my determination to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. As I've said many times, my strong preference is to resolve this issue peacefully, and we've extended the hand of diplomacy. Yet for many years, Iran's been unwilling to meet its obligations to the international community. So my administration worked with Congress, the United Nations Security Council, and countries around the world to impose unprecedented sanctions on the Iranian government. These sanctions have had a substantial impact on the Iranian economy. And with the election of a new Iranian president earlier this year, an opening for diplomacy emerged. I spoke personally with President Rouhani of Iran earlier this fall. Secretary Kerry has met multiple times with Iran's foreign minister. And we have pursued intensive diplomacy, bilaterally with the Iranians and together with our P5 plus one partners. The United Kingdom, France, Germany, Russia, and China, as well as the European Union. Today, that diplomacy opened up a new path toward a world that is more secure. A future in which we can verify that Iran's nuclear program is peaceful and that it cannot build a nuclear weapon. While today's announcement is just a first step, it achieves a great deal. For the first time in nearly a decade, we have halted the progress of the Iranian nuclear program, and key parts of the program will be rolled back. Iran has committed to halting certain levels of enrichment and neutralizing part of its stockpiles. Iran cannot use its next-generation centrifuges, which are used for enriching uranium. Iran cannot install or start up new centrifuges, and its production of centrifuges will be limited. Iran will halt work at its plutonium reactor, and new inspections will provide extensive access to Iran's nuclear facilities and allow the international community to verify whether Iran is keeping its commitments. These are substantial limitations which will help prevent Iran from building a nuclear weapon. Simply put, they cut off Iran's most likely paths to a bomb. Meanwhile, this first step will create time and space over the next 6 months for more negotiations to fully address our comprehensive concerns about the Iranian program. And because of this agreement, Iran cannot use negotiations as cover to advance its program. On our side, the United States and our friends and allies have agreed to provide Iran with modest relief while continuing to apply our toughest sanctions. We will refrain from imposing new sanctions, and we will allow the Iranian government access to a portion of the revenue that they have been denied through sanctions. But the broader architecture of sanctions will remain in place, and we will continue to enforce them vigorously. And if Iran does not fully meet its commitments during the six-month phase, we will turn off the relief and ratchet up the pressure. Over the next 6 months, we will work to negotiate a comprehensive solution. We approach these negotiations with a basic understanding. Iran, like any nation, should be able to access peaceful nuclear energy. But because of its record of violating its obligations, Iran must accept strict limitations on its nuclear program that make it impossible to develop a nuclear weapon. In these negotiations, nothing will be agreed to unless everything is agreed to. The burden is on Iran to prove to the world that its nuclear program will be exclusively for peaceful purposes. If Iran seizes this opportunity, the Iranian people will benefit from rejoining the international community, and we can begin to chip away at the mistrust between our two nations. This would provide Iran with a dignified path to forge a new beginning with the wider world based on mutual respect. If, on the other hand, Iran refuses, it will face growing pressure and isolation. Over the last few years, Congress has been a key partner in imposing sanctions on the Iranian government, and that bipartisan effort made possible the progress that was achieved today. Going forward, we will continue to work closely with Congress. However, now is not the time to move forward on new sanctions, because doing so would derail this promising first step, alienate us from our allies, and risk unraveling the coalition that enabled our sanctions to be enforced in the first place. That international unity is on display today. The world is united in support of our determination to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. Iran must know that security and prosperity will never come through the pursuit of nuclear weapons. It must be reached through fully verifiable agreements that make Iran's pursuit of nuclear weapons impossible. As we go forward, the resolve of the United States will remain firm, as will our commitments to our friends and allies, particularly Israel and our Gulf partners, who have good reason to be skeptical about Iran's intentions. Ultimately, only diplomacy can bring about a durable solution to the challenge posed by Iran's nuclear program. As President and Commander-in-Chief, I will do what is necessary to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. But I have a profound responsibility to try to resolve our differences peacefully, rather than rush towards conflict. Today, we have a real opportunity to achieve a comprehensive, peaceful settlement, and I believe we must test it. The first step that we've taken today marks the most significant and tangible progress that we've made with Iran since I took office. And now we must use the months ahead to pursue a lasting and comprehensive settlement that would resolve an issue that has threatened our security and the security of our allies for decades. It won't be easy, and huge challenges remain ahead. But through strong and principled diplomacy, the United States of America will do our part on behalf of a world of greater peace, security, and cooperation among nations. Thank you very much.
We'll bring you a comprehensive report on the agreement later in the program. Elsewhere in the world,
the Egyptian human rights groups have condemned a new law restricting public protests. The law was signed by Interim President Adli Mansour, and it bans protests without prior notice to the police. Critics say the legislation is mainly aimed at supporters of the now-banned Muslim Brotherhood and ousted President Mohamed Morsi. Thousands of pro-Morsi supporters gathered in Cairo and other cities on Sunday.
The apparent diplomatic success in Iran and the previous diplomatic success in Syria have given rise to optimism in Palestine.
Palestinian ambassador to Russia, Fayyad Mustafa, said it's possible to convene a conference to settle the Palestinian problem, similar to an international conference on Syria in Geneva. Itar Tass quoted him as saying, quote, "We believe that after the Geneva Conference on Syria and future Geneva III may be held, perhaps one more Geneva Conference, the third or fourth one, may be convened to resolve the Palestinian problem," close quote. Some 500 pro-EU protesters rallied in the Ukrainian capital of Kiev. No one was arrested. Demonstrators demand that the authorities sign an agreement on association and free trade with the EU. Last week, the Ukrainian government suspended the negotiations for that agreement. Clashes between Libyan troops and militants in the eastern city of Benghazi today killed at least three people and wounded a dozen more. Gunfire and explosions were heard in Benghazi, and smoke rose from the Ras Obeida area, according to Reuters. Fighting broke out when an Army Special Forces unit pursued a suspect into an area controlled by a militia, Ansar al-Sharia. A year ago, that group was blamed for the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, where the U.S. ambassador and three other Americans were killed. About 40 anti-government protesters forced their way into Thailand's finance ministry earlier today and are occupying it. That followed a march of more than 30,000 demonstrators in Bangkok seeking to overthrow the current Prime Minister, Yingluck Shinawatra. Power was cut to the building shortly after the protesters occupied it. Demonstrators spread across the city today to government offices, military and naval bases, and state TV channels to curb the alleged influence of the deposed former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra. A team of experts formed by the International Atomic Energy Agency is beginning to review the efforts to scrap the crippled reactors at Fukushima Daiichi. The IAEA team will focus on management of the radioactive water buildup at the site and fuel removal work that just started last week. And a Saudi court sentenced attackers on the U.S. consulate there to death and jailed others. One man was sentenced to death, 19 to jail terms ranging from 18 months to 25 years for storming the U.S. consulate in Jeddah in 2004. Another 35 defendants will be sentenced today and tomorrow. In the 2004 attack, the five militants stormed the U.S. consulate with bombs and guns, killed four Saudi security personnel and five local staff. Three of the attackers were killed and two were captured. The attackers were accused of being part of an al-Qaeda campaign aimed at ousting the ruling al-Saud family. That campaign was crushed in 2006, with more than 11,000 people being arrested. And now for more on the agreement between the P5 Plus One and Iran, we have two reports. First, this report from RT.
Well, we can now cross live to our correspondent, Polly Boyka, who's there for us. So, Polly, details of the long-awaited deal are emerging right now. So what do we know so far?
Well, what a momentous occasion, first of all, after two sets of failed negotiations before this. 10 years of political wrangling over Iran's nuclear issue. 5 days of talks, intense, heated talks here in Geneva. A night of several hundred journalists sleeping in the media center waiting for a decision. And we finally have a breakthrough. That historical deal has been reached. Now, it's hard to describe just how tense the atmosphere has been here throughout the night, waiting for any sort of news from those negotiations to find out whether or not that deal has been made. And up until the very last moment when we received the news about the deal being made, there was no way of knowing which way it was going to go, because sticking points still remained between all the sides. Now, the agreement that we have at the moment, according to the Russian Foreign Ministry, coincides with what Russia had been proposing from the offset in these nuclear negotiations. Now, what are the details that we know so far? Well, Foreign Minister, according to the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, the agreement recognizes Iran's right to a peaceful nuclear program, but it would be under the strict condition of inspections from the IAEA. I think we can have a listen to Sergei Lavrov talking about that right now.
The agreement is based on the concept put forward by the Russian President Vladimir Putin. The six negotiating powers agreed to recognize Iran's right to peaceful nuclear energy, including its right to nuclear enrichment, on the condition that its program is placed under strict control by the IAEA. This will boost confidence and will let our EU and US partners ease sanctions against Iran that they introduced bypassing the UN Security Council. Russia has never recognized the unilateral penalties. Easing pressure on Iran should start with lifting those.
Now, among the details that weren't mentioned there by Sergei Lavrov is that there will be the six-month freeze of Iran's nuclear program. No new centrifuges are going to be added and no new uranium enrichment facilities are going to be built. And Iran has agreed to stop enriching uranium to over 5%. Now, so the deal here has been made. It may only be an interim deal for the moment, which means that negotiations have to start up again in 6 months' time. But at the moment, it feels like a historic breakthrough, especially after a night spent in the media center.
Absolutely, Polly. Thank you so much for staying up for us and bringing us the very, very latest coming out of Geneva and the details of this groundbreaking deal achieved today between Iran and the six world powers. Polly Boyko there reporting. Well, Iran's right to enrich uranium was thought to be the main stumbling block in striking the deal in Geneva. And here's what American and Iranian foreign ministers had to say about it after the negotiations.
We believe that the current agreement, the current plan of action, as we call it, in two distinct places, has a very clear reference to the fact that Iranian enrichment program will continue and will be a part of any agreement, now and in the future.
This first step, let me be clear, this first step does not say that Iran has a right to enrichment. No matter what interpretive comments are made, it is not in this document. There is no right to enrich within the four corners of the NPT, and this document does not do that.
Well, we can now further discuss the long-awaited deal with Iran with Norman Solomon, who is director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, and he joins us live now from San Francisco. Norman, thank you for joining us here, RT, to discuss this. So, first off, we've just heard top diplomats from Iran and then the U.S. interpreting the deal quite differently. Who's right here regarding the uranium enrichment?
Well, I think they're both covering their bases in terms of their domestic audience, and I think it's splitting hairs that don't matter very much. The fact is the U.S. government has promoted for many decades, including ironically during the Shah's time in Iran, the development of nuclear power across the world, including Iran back in the 1960s. So the U.S. is promoting nuclear power. And it's important to people in Iran, as I learned when I spoke with folks on the street in Tehran a number of years ago, to assert the prerogative to develop nuclear power energy. So I think that's a rather minor point. What is so key is that this is a breakthrough for diplomacy, that aside from apparently the governments of Saudi Arabia and Israel, throughout the region and beyond, we can expect a lot of positive response to this agreement, which I think is a historic breakthrough and a very good one.
Well, you just said, Mr. Solomon, you just said that this is, of course, a victory of diplomacy and a groundbreaking deal. But, you know, I just want to perhaps discuss these contradictions or perhaps differences stipulated in the agreement. Because, you know, some may think that, of course, this is a temporary fix for 6 months. But what happens after that, given that it's taken a decade to get here, do you have faith at this point that the sides will find a long-term solution, given the differences that exist at the moment, of course?
Well, I think it's a plausible pathway that's been laid out now. And it's so important that the momentum has been reversed. The pressures towards war, stoked by some elements in the U.S. Congress, certainly pushed by Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, as well as the Saudi government, that momentum has been effectively not only hit the brakes, but actually has gone now in the last hours in the other direction. And that is a crucial dynamic, because when you have all the major players of those negotiations wanting the deal and getting the deal, it's a very favorable foreshadowing of what we're going to see 6 months and beyond. That said, it's going to be crucial that all the governments involved in this agreement stand by it and push back against pressure from Saudi Arabia and Israel, as well as the hawks in the U.S. Congress.
Well, speaking of the hawks in the U.S. Congress, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'd like to discuss now the domestic situation in America regarding this deal, because you know, in the situation right now, it seems like the administration has found itself, as they say, between the rock and a hard place. So how will this go down at home?
Well, the administration for a while found itself between Iran and a hard place, you might say. But because of the power of the presidency and the fact that a deal is in hand now, I think that the right-wing elements in the U.S. Congress, those who followed the lead of Benjamin Netanyahu, these were some Republicans and some Democrats, tonight and in the next days, they will be back on their heels. They will have to regroup. The momentum is now with this agreement. But there is no question that the Israeli government and those in the U.S. Congress who want an attack on Iran, they will not rest. They will hate this agreement. They will try to undermine it.
Now, what about the situation in the region, in the Middle East specifically? And, you know, speaking of Israel, as we know, Benjamin Netanyahu has been stepping up anti-deal rhetoric here. So what will be happening in, you know, in his country and around it, of course? Will you think the tensions be eased or, on the contrary, increase as a result of this groundbreaking deal today in Geneva?
Well, I think the tensions are going to be exacerbated within the two countries of Israel and Saudi Arabia, because they are going to be so unhappy with this deal. But I think in the region as a whole, this is a very positive development, because we want to defuse the tensions. We want to reduce the chances of cross-border attacks and international launching of major warfare. So I think that there's a new potential here to de-escalate a lot of the tensions. And I hope that long-term, we can have a ban on all weapons of mass destruction, nuclear and otherwise, in the entire region. This could be a good step in that direction.
All right, Norman Solomon, thank you so much for your views here, Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy.
Thank you.
Well, now let's take a look at the long and winding road to the historic deal. Iran's nuclear program started in the 1950s with the help of the U.S., but it is in the late 20th century that tensions started really heating up around its atomic ambitions. Back in 1996, the U.S. firmly moved down the track of sanctions, lambasting Tehran after alleging its nuclear program was for military purposes. And that's also when talks started, but they reached deadlock in 2005. And Iran's president at the time, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, resumed uranium enrichment. The U.N. were quick to respond unanimously, agreeing on their own set of sanctions a year later. Now, this, though, failed to convince Iran to drop its nuclear program. On the contrary, in 2010, it increased the level of uranium enrichment to 20%. And that was widely seen as a significant step towards Iran, towards arms production. Well, the move allegedly triggered the assassinations of four Iranian nuclear scientists with Israel's Mossad suspected of involvement. And finally, in June this year, Iran elected Hassan Rouhani as its new president, something many see as a game changer in Tehran's relations with the West. Well, what seemed like a major obstacle to a long-awaited deal was Israel's staunch opposition to any compromise. During a previous round of talks 2 weeks ago, that position seemed to be impacting on the negotiating stances of France and the U.S. Well, for more on this, we can now talk to our correspondent, Paula Sleer, who is in Tel Aviv, and she's gauging the reaction of Israel to this groundbreaking deal there. Hello to you, Paula. So do tell us about Israel's reaction. And of course, some are saying that Israel is not going to be happy about it.
Well, so far, there's been reaction only from one Israeli minister, the Minister of Strategic Affairs, Yuval Steinitz. He said, and I'm quoting, that the agreement remains a bad one that will make reaching a permanent solution harder. He also went on to say that this deal is based on Iranian deception and self-delusion. Now, what is interesting is that there has been a difference in terms of how the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and top members of his government have been reacting during this last round of talks in Geneva. Whereas in the past, Netanyahu was very public in his criticism of the deal, the Israelis recently have turned their attention to some kind of quiet diplomacy behind the scenes. What we do know is that Steinitz has been on the phone with all the heads of the negotiating teams in Geneva. At the same time, he's also spoken with two of the foreign ministers who were involved. What the Israelis are trying to do, or what they at least were trying to do, was to influence the wording of the statement. What we're being told now is that high-ranking diplomats from some of the countries that were involved in these talks will soon be making their way to Tel Aviv to brief the Israelis in terms of what happened in Geneva and on the way forward. Among the points that the Israelis were particularly concerned about and were hoping to influence in this last round were, for example, the whole issue of the Arak reactor. Here, the Israelis were demanding that the agreement says that all activity at the Arak plant be halted. They were also concerned over the wording of scientific research. The Israelis saying that they want this deal not to give legitimacy to the Iranians to be able to continue developing other aspects of their nuclear program under the wording of scientific research. Now, the U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, has said that this deal makes Israel safer. No doubt there'll be a lot of scoffing in Tel Aviv at these comments, because it is precisely this that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been pushing, and that is that the deal not only does not make Israel not safer, but it is a threat to the international community. We're waiting for some kind of reaction and some kind of comment from him later in the day today. One of the big questions, of course, is what does Israel do next? It has been threatening for quite some time that it will conduct a military strike. Particularly, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has used a lot of warmongering. There were also reports that the Israelis were working behind the scenes with the Saudis of the possibility of launching some kind of military action if indeed a deal is signed off in Geneva, as has been now.
All right, Paul, thanks for gauging the reaction in Israel for us there. Our correspondent, Paul Sleer, reporting from Tel Aviv. Well, prior to this round of talks, there were reports that if a deal was struck in Geneva, Israel may join forces with Saudi Arabia in a military campaign against Iran. The once unthinkable alliance of former foes is allegedly prompted by both nations' refusal to accept any compromise on Tehran's nuclear program. Jamal Abdi, policy director at the National Iranian American Council, however, believes such a conflict is a very unlikely scenario.
Every time Netanyahu wants another sanctions bill passed in Congress, he makes sure to send signals to lawmakers here in the U.S. that, hey, you have to pass this bill, otherwise you're going to have a war on your hands, that Israel is going to start and the United States is going to finish. The Saudis have done the same thing, not as publicly. I think that anytime you hear the Israelis and now the Saudis talking loud about military action, that's a signal that military action is not necessarily being planned, but that they're trying to use this as leverage in order to drive the hand of the U.S. or the international community in a certain direction. When they start being quiet about a potential military strike, that's when you have to think, okay, maybe something is actually underway here.
And finally, this is what Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had to say about the deal.
What was concluded in Geneva last night is not a historic agreement. It's a historic mistake. Israel is not bound by this agreement. We cannot and will not allow a regime that calls for the destruction of Israel to obtain the means to achieve this goal. We will not allow Iran to have a nuclear weapons capability.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.